Hello, and welcome to the Heal Your Heart, Heal Your Life podcast, the podcast where we talk all things healing, trauma, what we've been through, and how we've moved through that in order to open our hearts and heal what we've been through. And on today's episode, I'm very excited to welcome Rochelle. Beautiful Rochelle is a holistic counselor, a shamanic nanny, and a channeled healer. And she's here today to tell us her story. So welcome, Rochelle. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
No worries. Tell us a bit about your story.
Where do I begin? I guess as in my childhood, I've always been a difficult child or a child that's been too much, too loud, too emotional. And really, my parents or my community just didn't know what to do with me. So naturally, I just felt like I wasn't good enough and I never really fitted in properly. And as I've evolved over time, I've really come into myself and realized that there's nothing actually wrong with me, that there was just some stuff that needed to be cleared. Some healing needed to take place. And it's been, like a committed journey, I would say, for the past 4 years, where I felt like I had to sort of isolate myself from the world, and give myself that space to dive into, like, how did I become the person that I was? Because I wasn't someone who valued health or valued life highly. And I was quite disconnected and unaware and quite lonely, and that's not how I wanted to live my life. And so it's just been this journey of like relearning and deep understanding and deep awareness about myself and how I want to show up for the
Great.
world for me. Yeah.
I really admire that. I love when people, do the work, do the inner work. I'm like impressed every time because I know how challenging it can be. I'd love to know, like, what spurred that? You said 4 years ago. Was there something that made you decide, no, nah, this is it. This is the turning point for me?
There was a specific section of my life where my physical health was spiraling really bad. I was putting on quite a bit of weight, and because of that weight, I was very ashamed and I hid and I noticed that I wouldn't be going to like family events, celebrating birthdays, and all of these things that I value very highly. I just wasn't embodying what I valued. And it just got to the point where I was emotionally and physically really uncomfortable with myself. And I could also see, this is when I met my partner Travis. I saw this beautiful fairy being that was excited and in touch with his femininity, which I wasn't at that stage, very expressive and like very confident. And I yearned to be that way. And I used to be that way as a child. So I had a few close core people in my life that were really doing some incredible things that I inspired to be. So it was that inspiration that really gave me access to it being possible as well. Because also the people in my life were also going through their, I guess, their shadow work or their inner wounds as well. And the fact that they could also go through that healing process sort of made it possible for me. And then I started doing some self-development programs.
Fantastic. I want to ask you, so is this when you said your femininity was kind of shut off, do you think that that stemmed from you being that child who people told was too much and like didn't know how to handle? Is that where that started? Did you shut
Oh,
yourself up?
yeah, definitely. Like my father was the one that did a lot of the I guess the telling off and the punishment and the control. My mum was very nurturing, but also I also had a lot of issues with her, and she was also not connected to her femininity. So there wasn't, there wasn't a divine feminine presence in my life. As a young female, there it wasn't, I wasn't really present to it. So I didn't know how to be in my emotions safely. I didn't know how to be in receiving. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know how to trust and surrender. None of those things I never got brought up learning about.
Yeah, I think you hit on a good point there. It's like, if that's not in our family of origin or in our immediate circle when we're kids, it's like our normal is not having that if it's not present. It's like you don't know how to embody that in the same way that if there was that presence there. And you know how to embody maybe the wounds more of that aspect. So when you delved more into it, what was it about those childhood wounds that came up for you?
At the beginning, I thought it was my issues with my mum.
Yeah.
Because she was the female, she was the feminine. I related to her. However, recently I've discovered that my focused of my trauma around my childhood was focused on my mum, but it was actually created by my dad and how he treated her and how he treated me. So it was actually the lack of, I guess, feminine energy within my father. That was actually what I was yearning for. I was always daddy's little girl. He always wanted a son, and I was always one that was quite edgy and would go motorbike riding with him and always wanting his love and attention. And yeah, I guess when he became like abusive and dominating and manipulative, I learned very specific ways of being from him. So I learned his ways. I hated his ways, but as a child, I just thought, okay, this is how I treat people that I love. If my dad loves me, which he does, and he's treating me this way, well, that must be what love is like. This is what love is. When we see what our parents are doing and how they embody their love, that's what we think love is. Now, I've been working with children for 7 years, and that was probably the main reason why I started delving into my own childhood is because I was in their present trauma responses that were happening right now. As 3-year-olds, as 5-year-olds, I could really see how they were affected by their parents. And kids don't, mostly they don't hide away from what they're experiencing. They'll tell you, hey, mom, you're not looking at me. You're not listening to me. Why are you hurting me? I'm not a bad boy. You know, like it's in the dialogue where when we grow up, we kind of learn to shut that off because no one's actually really listening. We start suppressing, you know, that's when the suppression comes in. So here I am seeing kids going through what I went through, but it's like I had forgotten. I'm witnessing them and I'm feeling them and I'm like, oh wow, I know that pain. I know that trauma response. Oh wow, I do this. And then I started the unraveling.
Just like you pull up the string and it like it's a lot longer than you ever anticipate, but you get there in the end. So, you just resonated with what the kids were going through, and that's kind of what made you think, hang on, there might be something here.
Because it was every child.
Yeah.
Everyone has their programs.
Yeah.
Everyone has their ways of being. And if that doesn't come from a place of love and compassion and light, it can get very distorted for the person who's on the receiving end of that.
Yeah. And I think even the people with the most idyllic childhoods who had a great time or whatever, there's always something. I find that there's always something that maybe a parent was just exhausted that day and couldn't deal with it and just lashed out, or, you know, had their own stuff going on. They've projected that onto the kid. It's like, I feel like everyone's got some wounds there when they delve deep enough. Just needs to be uncovered. And I guess, were you attracted to working with kids because of what happened to you in your childhood, do you think? Like, because you wanted to help the kids who were a bit rowdy or whatever?
I think it was on a very subconscious level. I think my inner child was yearning for play. I didn't allow myself to play outside of that world. And it was actually my mum that was like, you know, you should study childcare. You've always been good with kids. And I knew that about me, but I never connected the dots. And then I went for my orientation, and like, I just had some playtime with the kids, and I was just attracted to that level of play and authenticity. I was like, this is so refreshing. Children are more honest and vulnerable than adults are. This is where I need to be. And they taught me just as much, maybe even more than what I taught them.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
that's the kind of childhood educator I want my future children having.
It's very deep exchange. It is. That's what it is. It's a very, very deep exchange. And a lot of educators out there, they don't allow themselves to receive it, because in order for you to receive the medicine of children, you have to be in your inner child, which is terrifying for most people, because there's trauma there.
Yeah.
So it's like every day I went to work and I got to meet more parts of myself, and and regularly a child would make me cry.
Yeah.
Because the amount of love that they're giving me, or the times that they would see me or tell me that they missed me or loved me, or just little things that would just touch me in a way where I never got seen or touched as a child, because there was so much other noise happening in my life. There was no softness for me.
I feel like I've done inner child work with people, and they open up that up, and their inner child's like screaming at them, and it's like a very confronting experience. It's like, oh my god, I don't want to deal with this anger. It's like, it's a lot. And I can see why people would shy away from that, but it's just wounding. And then once you get in touch with that and you actually can sit with that, like there is just so much healing there. Sure. I want to circle back, if it's okay, unless you have something else. To when you were talking about your family dynamic and how your dad kind of ruled the roost, did that template that you said that you ended up with, kind of trying to win his affections and stuff, did that follow you into your relationships?
Definitely. I was attracted to, I guess, men that were emotionally unavailable, but also had this wild nature that loved motorbikes, loved camping, like really enthusiastic, which my father was like. Except for the relationship that I'm in now, which I'm with a very feminine man, and I chose that quite consciously. I've been choosing men that are like my father. What would it be like if I chose someone who was not like him? And that played out in a really beautiful, healing way, that I fell in love, and it was really nurturing. However, there was a bit of a turn in our relationship, and my father wounds still made their way in. Which was really surprising, which has probably been the most vulnerable, heart healing experience that I think I've ever gone through. where the abuse that I received from my father told me that in order to get my way, I have to dominate and abuse people.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was what little Rochelle had in her mind.
Mm.
And that began to leak into my relationship with Travis.
Mm.
And then he would react to that, and then he would remind me of my father.
Yeah.
I would be saying that I hate him and I'm really angry with him and I'm raging at him.
Mm.
And then feeling like I would get flashes of my 5-year-old self in those moments. So there was a direct link for me. Mm. I was like, wow, this is so familiar.
Yeah.
This feels familiar. Where have I experienced this before? Because I think when it comes to triggers and being triggered with people in the constant reality, it's never about what's actually happening then and there.
Yeah.
It's always past wounds that haven't been dealt with.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree. That's like so many times it's just reflective of something from the past that's come up again and reminds us of that, the same feeling.
Yeah.
It's another chance to heal, another chance to heal that wound. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this has definitely been like I call it my sacred rage.
Yeah.
Because I do want to honor it. It does have, it protected me, you know, it protected me as a girl, little girl. But yeah, I really had to look into what wounding needs, what wounds needs to be addressed here.
Yeah, yeah.
What's actually, what are my needs? What needs aren't getting met? Why is she coming up with this rage and trying to dominate? Like what's actually happening? And I realized that I had some really strong stories in my heart around not loving men,
yeah,
not trusting men, not respecting men, and then I looked at my male partner and I was like, well, how can I continue in this relationship and have children with you when my brain believes these things about men? This needs to be addressed. These core wounds need to be addressed. And I did some incredible work with someone who does root cause therapy.
Oh, yeah.
So I could get down to very specific moments in my life where these beliefs were created. And that was really powerful because then I could have direct communication with that version of myself and really see what was going on. And I also felt like I needed to address this issue with my father directly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I always sort of thought like, oh, when we've been traumatized by someone, we don't have to go to the source, because I know that sometimes that's not available. Sometimes people have passed away.
Yeah.
Sometimes people aren't receiving or wanting to be in dialogue with you around it. It's just not possible, which is fine. But I'm at a beautiful stage in my life where I can come to my father with anything. So I thought, I'm going to use this and I'm going to utilize this for my benefit. And I'm going to be extremely vulnerable and I'm going to ask myself, what does little Rochelle need? Because it's her that I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And she needed to, acknowledge what happened. Because part of the trauma was it getting dismissed.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to talk about it with my mom or even with my dad. I would say to my dad, like, Dad, you've hurt me. I've got bruises on me. And he would always say, like, oh, but my dad hurt me 10 times worse. Like, you've got it easy, Rochelle. And he'd always try and justify it.
Yeah.
So there was this part of me that wanted to just express my truth.
Yeah.
And get it off my chest. And it was never able to be received by anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so I began to write a letter to my dad with the intention of reading it to him.
Yeah.
And as I was writing the letter, I noticed when I came up to use the word abuse, I couldn't write it and I forgot the word.
Wow.
So there was it was like so difficult for me to acknowledge that word, because I always thought, oh, I didn't get abused. Like, yeah. That's not true. And that denial kept me trapped.
Yeah.
It kept it all down there. So I was in this beautiful process of just journaling and expressing and using the words, like it was dominating, and I felt dominated, and I learned this behavior, and now it's leaking out into my relationships with the men in my life, and it's toxic. And at the end of it, I was like, how is this going to conclude? How am I going to, what is the answer?
Yeah.
What is the overall answer of this healing? And when I'm always lost in that world of when does it ever end, I always ask myself, what would love do?
Yeah, I love that. Oh, beautiful.
What would love do? And straight away, the answer was just like total forgiveness. I need to forgive my father. And then also myself.
Yes. So important.
So it was, and it's the two things, because it's like, yes, we can forgive what's done to us, but I need to also forgive that younger version of me that couldn't express for so many years. And the part of me that turned abusive, that actually behaved like my father. I need to also love and honor and forgive her. And then that's what I shared in my letter, and I created space for me, my dad, to sit down and for me to read it. And he just gave me unconditional love and presence. And that was beautiful that he gave me that. But what was most impactful was that I did this for me. I shared my story. I shared my truth, and I came back to love for myself. Because I didn't want this in my life. And it comes down to choice. You have to be brave enough to choose something different.
Because
it's safe for me to be angry. It's safe for me to hate men.
Yeah.
It's so wedged in my psyche to be this way. It's effortless for me to be this raging, abusive person. But that's not what I desire.
It's not
what I want. So to choose love and to choose confidence and expression and vulnerability has been gateway for me on my healing journey.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And I love that you had the courage to go tell him, this is exactly what I'm thinking and feeling. And I love that he resonated and responded to you with that and gave you that presence that you never had in childhood and probably needed then.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It was. I feel like I kind of felt like I was really lucky to be able to have that experience, because I share this story with a lot of people and they're just like, I don't get that. My parents are shut off. No way could they sit down with me. They don't care about my emotions. So a lot of this work, before I spoke to my dad, I had to be okay with any response. I prepared for him to yell at me, to walk away, to blame me. I mentally prepared myself, and I told myself that this is for me and not for him. And if it's for me, then I don't care about his response, actually. It's not about that. I'm not attached. It's beautiful what it was, and that's a bonus. That's amazing. But I wasn't going there searching for something outside of myself.
That external validation.
And I think that's a really big part of this healing process, especially when we're talking about when we're relating to people. And even like having a fight with a friend, you know, having a fight with a friend, wanting to have a talk about it and expecting them to apologize.
Yeah.
Or expecting them to act a certain way. And that's just where things get extremely messy, because we've got no control over what people do.
Mm,
all we've got control over is our intentions and the way we perceive things.
It's like you said, it's about you. The most healing part of that journey for you was writing the letter and expressing the letter. And it's like the fact you've spoken your truth is like, I'm not going to stand for this anymore and sit down quietly. I'm going to say it. Express it, and then whatever, however you respond is your stuff. That's not my stuff anymore.
Yeah, it's very like, if we want to heal the heart, we heal our relationship with self.
Yeah,
that's what it really comes down to. How am I treating myself? How am I behaving? What do I need working on? And I feel like that's the internal work. That's when we go away and we retreat, we focus on ourselves, and then when we come back out into the world, that's when people notice a shift.
Yeah, and that's still healing the bloodline in a way. Even if your parental figure is not responding to you, even if it's not going well, the fact that you've broken that pattern in your family line, in yourself, and you love yourself enough to do this, it's done. And it's their choice if they come around to your new vibration around that or not. And again, not your karma.
And that's a really powerful part of this healing process, and something that definitely inspires me to do the work is that I know it's ancestral.
Yeah.
And I know it's for the future generations. It's not mine. And it's like, I can't put up my hand and go, oh, I'm the first child in my bloodline to get abused by their parents.
No.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of generations, you know? But I can say that maybe I'm one of few that has gone back to their parent and expressed themselves about what happened and asked and gave forgiveness. Because I can definitely see in both my parents, there is levels of forgiveness that aren't being felt.
Yeah.
There's still work that needs to be done. So it felt really inspiring to be able to clear this with my dad before I have my own children.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's really important to me. It's like, I don't want to pass on these patterns to my kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to clear up as much as I possibly can.
I love that. And how has this affected your relationship with Travis?
Well, it's still very new, so it's probably been about a month since I've spoken to my dad. It's very fresh, and I haven't embodied my rage. It's not there anymore. And it's sort of like I've created more doorways of being with Travis, because I'm not coming from this place of like desperation of like, oh, I need to be heard and this needs to come out, and it's just not, that energy's not there anymore. I feel really centered, and I honestly think that Travis is quite surprised by how I respond now instead of reacting. Which is huge, because the frequency of the energy that I had, that rage and that obsessiveness, it also wanted to fight. It's like there was a part of me that wanted to bring her out. Like, I wanted to find a reason to get angry so I could be in my rage, so I could express my hatred for my father. And it was all very subconscious. It was all very, very unaware. Now that that's not there, it just feels like I'm so soft. I'm just so open. And like, so if something happens and Travis is in a reactive state, I'm just like, oh, are you okay, babe? Like, what do you need? Like, I don't make it about me. Little Rochelle doesn't come in and make it about her. Because she's been looked after. She's been sorted. She's resting now. She's She's all good. So it has impacted our relationship in a really powerful way. And I feel like when we do come into relationships with our partners and our lovers, that we have a level of responsibility for our traumas and our triggers.
Yeah.
And I feel like in order to have deep, meaningful, authentic relationships, they need to be addressed, and you need to be working on them. And that was a commitment that I had to make for my relationship, because it was going to ruin it. Mm. I could feel it. It was so strong. And I wasn't willing to give up on what we'd created just because I had some daddy wounds that I hadn't addressed.
Yeah, I think when things are suppressed, they demand to be felt. Mm. They'll find a way to pop back up. It's like, I liken it to a beach ball you're trying to push under the water. Oh,
totally.
And then it just pops up over here.
Pops
and
up
pops
somewhere
up over
else.
There. And I find that it's these, probably our most loving relationships, that we suddenly feel safe enough for that inner child to come back out and go, oh, I need to say this. I need to jump on this, because I need to express this that's been sitting with me for like 20 years or something. Like, and this person can hold me in that and hold space for that.
Yes.
But at the same time, there's this, I feel like conflict in relationships is not necessarily a bad thing, but there is a point where it gets too much.
Yes.
And things get really hard. And I think that's the point where we work on our stuff and we come back and we try and delve into that a bit more and take personal responsibility for it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I love that you haven't shamed yourself for this anger the whole time. Like, it's like anger is one of those things that a lot of people are just like, oh no, I'm not allowed to feel that. I'm not allowed to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
But shaming ourselves for it is just another form of suppression, where we're just pretending it's not here. And I'm not like that. I'm a good person. And just because you're angry, you're not a bad person. It's just, you've got some wounding, and that's how you're protecting yourself, you know?
Yeah. It was also a journey to get to that stage of not shaming my anger, because I did. And Travis and I had just gone traveling in our caravan around Australia for 8 months, and I couldn't hide. So I was actually forced to have this be seen, and that was terrifying.
Yeah.
To be in my anger and then to be witnessed by someone else was terrifying. And the love that we had was so strong that, like you said, it was held. Travis loved me in that state. And that was so healing. And that's something that you can't pay for that experience. You can't force that experience. It's just, it was so beautiful, and it just deepened my appreciation and love for him, and it deepened our relationship together to be like, wow, like, this is what we can do for each other. We can hold each other in those vulnerable states, love ourselves through these triggers, so the other person can heal. Isn't that why we're in relationships?
Yes, most
definitely.
Isn't
that the contract? Isn't that what we're here? We're here to come together and evolve and love each other through all parts of ourselves. Not just the good stuff. It was really big, and it was really beautiful. And I feel so grateful to be on the other end now. And to have that experience. And I feel like there's a lot of wisdom and a lot of tools in there that I can now share with people. Because I've gone through that shadow work, which it always happens that way. You know, I don't think there'll ever be a point in my life where I'm like, oh, there's no healing that needs to be done. I don't think it just stops. I think it's forever happening and evolving. And that's just part of this human experience.
Yeah, I feel like the moment you're like, I don't have anything to work on, I'm fine, the universe is like, well, we're going to show you something.
Totally. We've got to be careful with that.
But I love that. I feel like true intimacy is being seen and heard and witnessed for your entire vulnerable self, whether that be angry self, whether that be your inner child, and being fully seen and loved for that anyway. That is true intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. often in our not so great relationships or our average relationships, it's like we're so busy fighting fires of like other things yeah. going on and saving other people and all their stuff that it's like we don't have time for ourselves. But in that loving, real deep connections, it's like sometimes that's where more of this stuff pops up because it's another ability and a chance to heal.
Exactly right. And it even goes deeper as well, because then there was a part of me that maybe relied on Travis to hold me in my triggers and in my pain. And then it got to the point of, no, what if I was able to hold myself and love myself in this moment? And that was the deeper healing. That was the self-love. That was coming into my own heart and being like, wow, like you are beautiful in your rage.
Yes.
You are beautiful in your sadness. And just letting that be felt, letting myself feel that love for myself was something that I don't think I've ever tapped into. Yeah.
That's powerful. That's like, you can do anything, girl, if you can love yourself in all of that.
Yeah. It's, people, it's like unable to be penetrated.
Yeah.
It's unable to shift. If you've got that core deep relationship with yourself, that there's just like, it's like yourself, your consciousness, your spirit, your body knows that you've got it. And there's always going to be time for integration, time for presence, time for feeling in the body. I just feel like, once that dialogue has been developed, that we get to move through stuff a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Things don't last very long. It's like very, like this stuff up with my father only showed up 2 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, so it's on the scale, it's being integrated and felt quite quickly.
Yeah.
Which is what I want.
Change your timeline in 2 months. That's huge.
2 months.
I feel like, it's almost like being with our partners and having that rage come up is like level one, where it's like we have to have an experience where it's like, this isn't going to go the same way it went in my childhood, where I just got shunned and denied and no, that didn't happen, you know, and put down. It's like the same experience comes up, the same feeling comes up, but the reaction and the response is different. And that shows us, you know, there's another way. There's another way here. I'm not a bad person for feeling this way.
No.
This beautiful person in front of me has reflected that back to me. And then the work from there is, how can I give that back to myself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's so simple when you look at it like that. It's so simple. I just give myself what I need. But this type of work is what I intend to teach the children that I nanny. The children that I look after, or the people that I'm going to be counseling, it's like, it's this type of work, these core fundamentals around loving the self is really what is going to make the changes that you need for your life.
Yes. I feel like we're so allergic to like hard things in terms of emotions, like even just emotions in general, people can't handle. But even the shadow work and the level of having to delve into that and lean into it, there's a resistance there. And I feel like if we can teach that to the next generation, like that'll be life-changing.
And it's happening. It's a lot of kids that I'm experiencing when I'm with them, they're saying things like, just that level out of awareness of like, I don't want to be touched. That makes me feel sad. You know, and it's like, oh, okay, you can be sad, you know, and just like witness them in their sadness and just like just hold space.
Yeah, like let's normalize that it's okay to feel that way. It's okay to talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess, is this where shamanic nanny work comes in? Because I really want to know what that means.
Yes. Well, when I've been working with kids, I've always brought in spirituality, self-awareness, energetics into how I am with kids, because these are tools and I guess values that I hold in myself.
Mm.
And then it started to get recognized by the parents and obviously the children. Like I knew that I was creating access for kids like I've never seen anyone else before. And the amount of attraction and attention the kids were giving me because I was going really deep with them it ended up being too much for me. And I had to leave the childcare setting because just the amount of energy that I was giving and also the kids were needing from me. So it's like I raised the bar. I was teaching them so much about love and about magic and about medicine and about plants and about the world. And it was just so holistic and so alternative that they just gravitated towards me.
Mm.
So yeah, I started doing some nannying and some nanny sharing for pretty much a bunch of medicine women, witches, healers. And one of them, yeah, as I was working with their daughter for a while, one of them was like, you're just a shamani. You're just like a shamanic nanny. Like you're holding space for these kids to move through what currently is present for them.
Yeah.
And you're reading them on a deep soul level. And then to be able to receive that, it was difficult for me because I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is just how I am. And then I could really see what they meant by it. And it just gives the children an opportunity that is away from, I guess, the third dimension.
This is,
when I look at kids, I don't look at them like they're a child.
Mm.
I don't treat them like that this is their first time here.
Mm, mm.
I'm feeling into their spirit.
Yeah.
All the time. Feeling into their medicine because everyone's got gifts.
Mm, mm.
You know? So making sure that when I'm with child that I'm not shutting anything down.
Yeah.
I allow everything to come up.
Yeah.
Allow everything to be in motion. Allow everything to be felt. And I hold space for them. And then I'm able to definitely see like where the trauma is and how the child is moving through their trauma quite clearly.
Yeah.
That when maybe the parent can't see that fully, because most of the time when a child is traumatized, it's from the parent's trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a part of my work where I'm actually coming as a shamanic nanny and I'm holding space for the parents or the guardians, whoever's looking after the children, for both parties to be held and acknowledged, and for me to offer advice for everyone.
Yeah.
To hold like space for everyone. And that feels really necessary.
Mm.
Because children are just, well, physically, they're made by these two beings.
Yeah.
So whatever they're created from is what they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I'm working with a child, I'm really just working with their parents and their bloodline and their ancestors. Mm. And to use these holistic, spiritual, sort of based techniques, things are just able to be recognized and felt and moved through quickly. It's direct. It's very clear.
Yeah.
It's not hidden. Like, you know, when you go see a child having a tantrum on the floor at the supermarket and the parents like grabbing them and trying to restrain them or walking away from them, and the parents triggered and the child triggered, and it's like, who's holding the space?
Yeah.
Who's holding the space and who's supporting them also outside emotionally?
Mm.
No one. So I want to be able to come in and actually really identify what's actually happening here.
Mm.
And parents are ready.
Yeah.
There are parents out there that are like, I'm just so devoted to my children that I'm ready to put aside my ego and I'm ready to disarm and I'm ready to listen and receive outside information than what I know.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm just offering, a different perspective. And then you can take it, you can take some of it, you can not take it at all. But I do find that most people are really ready to address what is needed. It just, even the frequency of the human race anyway at the moment. I feel like, yeah, a lot of people have that confidence and that awareness to begin this work. So I think it's a perfect time for me to open up my services to the communities and offer a way of nannying that isn't just like, come look after my child and keep them alive for 7 hours and then go home.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like, you're inviting me into your house, into your family. This is a relationship now.
Yeah.
And we're going to work. We're going to work really beautifully together. So everyone's needs are getting met.
That's the
intention. I want everyone's need to get met, and I want there to be just a really deep understanding and just like love to be present for everyone.
Yeah. Even for that child to have a voice through you, in a way, it's like, a lot of children are so terrified of upsetting their parents, or like, just yes, validation and approval is such a big thing. It's like, they'd never tell them, oh, I don't like it when you yell at me, or I don't like it when you do that. But then they would tell you, and you're kind of like the middle person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I get to see, like, I get to experience the child that isn't so impacted by their parents. It's like, there is definitely a layer of vulnerability and expression where they're not afraid, because I haven't done anything to them in their eyes. I'm this really light, really happy, really, but also like really beautifully, like, I create really, really beautiful boundaries with kids as well. So there's that level of respect that they have for me. And I'm just this person that they could just open up to and be vulnerable with without having it attached to their parents or even family members. Like, I'm not your auntie. I'm not your grandmother. I'm not your sibling. This is a different relationship, and it's really safe. It's really safe for them. And I actually, I had that in my relationship as a child with my mum's adopted mother. So she wasn't, I wasn't related to her, but she was definitely someone who came in and just gave me that presence. And I really valued that my whole life. And that's sort of something that anchors me in on how I want to be for kids. I want someone who they can just fully trust and fully let down their guards and show me what's really happening. And then, because it's like a shell, right? It's like, when you're vulnerable, you open up.
Yeah.
And maybe the core wound is in the middle.
Yeah.
And I get a chance to gently step into that. And I can say things like, wow, you're really beautiful. Like, your soul's really beautiful. Or, wow, you're doing a really beautiful job. Or it could be like little sentences, but because they're so open and they're so vulnerable, it gives them that love that they're desiring. It's like, I can speak really directly through the trauma itself. And it just fades away. And because the kids are so young, you can plant seeds very quickly, and seeds grow very quickly.
Wow.
So the amount of impact you can have with children is huge, and it happens the next day. They'll integrate it.
That's amazing. It's like, they won't have to go through that experience of having the relationship, getting angry, having to work through that, because it's all being kind of handled now.
Yeah. So that's the main intention when I'm looking after a child, as long as alongside like the creative self and the play and the expansion and all the things that kids go through. But really this emotional state is the shamanic nannying that comes into play.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That is so needed in this world, and there's definitely not enough of that out there.
No.
Thank you for doing that work. That's beautiful.
Thank you. I mean, it's definitely, I can feel it's what I needed as a child. That's the reason why I went through my childhood, was so I can find the tools to give it to other people.
Yes. And how empowering is that to know that you're giving back what you needed when you were a kid to those kids?
It's the best. It is like, it feels like my pain wasn't all for nothing.
Yes. Yeah.
And that feels really light. It's like, okay, cool. And then I can go through traumatic things. I can go through pain because I know there's going to be messages in there. I know there's going to be lessons in there, and I know I'm going to need to share them with people. So I'm open to being and experiencing all different types of things because I've got that devotion to myself that it's going to be shared with people, and it's going to create change for people.
Yeah, it's almost like a level of, I've done it before, I can do it again. I can transmit whatever life throws at me, because I know it's for my greater good, and then other people around me is greater good. Yeah.
And that's also the frequency of love, is it's not just for the self. Like, we love ourselves so we can love others.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like human beings are all about the collective. The heart is all about the collective, empathy and expression. It's just about how people are being seen and felt. And I think that, that's what really pulls a lot of people, actually, is to be able to impact people. That's it. That's what all we really want to wish for, is like, by the end of our life, did I make a difference?
Yeah. And I feel like once we've healed our own inner wound, it's like, all right, how can I heal the world's wound on this?
Yes.
It expands out. It's more than just us. Yeah.
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 Wow.
Yeah. It feels really light to have that perspective that I'm not alone. It's not just me in the darkness and in the light. I'm doing this work for the people around me. Yeah.
And that's the motivation we need sometimes when we're in the thick of it and it's everything's shit and it's just not going well.
But, you know, why am I doing this?
This is why.
Yeah.
So I hope we've motivated a few people with that today.
Yes.
Is there anything else you feel like you want to mention, or that we've missed, or that is really important?
Let me see. One thing that came through is that I think the most healing I've ever done is out in nature. Mostly by myself.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be for a long period of time, but just like being out by the waters, by the old trees, being held by the frequency of the earth. It's always felt like I'm able to feel and release and get the clarity that I need in a space that is pure and clean. So if someone was to come up to me and be like, how do I begin? Where do I go to first? I would suggest taking your shoes off, going out into nature, and just being with yourself, and then just seeing what's there.
Yeah.
If you need to cry, that's great, because you don't have to perform. A lot of a lot of what keeps us trapped is the pressures of work and friends and how are people going to view me, and I can't be loud because someone will hear me, and all of this pressure from society. When you take that away and it's just you and the earth, I feel like it really creates some space to breathe and for that authentic way of healing to begin.
Yeah,
so I would say, yeah, definitely make that a really intentional practice for your healing journey, just going out into the bush and like being with yourself and just seeing what's there when no one else is around, because that's how you know where you're at, really. Because there's nothing else there, no phone, no people, no distractions. And then have that talk to yourself, have that dialogue with you. Oh, it's finally us. It's finally just me and you, me and the self. Where are we at? And just letting that come out.
Your inner child's always listening and will take any opportunity, I think, to pop in.
Yes.
Yeah. Would you call that like finding stillness out in nature? You find a bit of like kind of meditative state in a way, and then that's where all the information drops in?
You could call it that, but I don't know if it looks that way. Like every time that I've gone out into the bush and I've done any type of work, it looks different every time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm crying on the earth and emotionally releasing. Other times I'm really distracted and I'm playful and I'm really present. And sometimes I'm also like a bit of an aloof, just like not really aware, and I'm just sort of strolling and off with the fairies. Or I think no matter what happens out there, I think it's all needed. I think I believe in the divine, and whatever your experience is your experience. But as long as there's that intention that you're going, hey self, hey body, I'm just going to give you an hour outside in the bush by yourself. Do what you need. Recharge your batteries, express yourself, get triggered. A lot of the time I'd go into the bush and I'd get scared. And all of my fears would come up.
Yeah.
And that's still medicine for me.
I'm
like, oh, I don't feel safe in my body. Maybe I need to take a self-defense class. Maybe I need to work more on my muscles or my diet, or, you know, there's always medicine there. So yeah, without attachments, to just go out, be with the land, see what you receive, and then integrate it.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like Mother Nature holds you so much in whatever you bring, you know, and yourself. Back to self. And just giving ourselves that time, because it's so easy to get so busy and just give our time to everyone else but never ourselves. But shadow work is like you're devoting to you.
To you. Yeah. And what does that look like?
Yeah.
We have to create it for ourselves.
What fills your cup the most?
What do you like? A lot of the time when I was in a space of like confusion, I just asked, like, what do I need right now? Not what do I want? Because if I chase the wanting, I end up in a place that is really inauthentic.
Yeah.
So what am I actually needing right now? And that's a beautiful thing to anchor yourself in. Like it's the what would love do? And what do I need?
Yeah.
And then to be devoted to both of those things. And to have that play out in your life, that's just where the magic happens. Following those two like self commands is really, really powerful.
Definitely. And just being open to whatever comes. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
By asking those questions, you're like, I'm ready, divine. Give me the answer. Yeah. What do I need?
Yeah. What do I need? Let it drop in and then just play with it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Rochelle. Is there anything else?
No, I think I feel really whole and complete.
I love that.
Great. Yeah.
Where can we find you if we want to find a shamanic nanny or a
The
shaman?
best place is definitely on my Instagram, which is just Rochelle Willoughby underscore underscore. Yeah, there's going to be a website brewing in the next month, where I can speak more about it and probably post some more videos and content around what it is, because it's definitely something that no one's really heard before.
Yeah, you're in a niche market there.
Yes. And alongside my holistic counseling as well, which is also a lot of things that people haven't heard about. So yeah, there'll be definitely a lot of information online for people to come and contact me and yeah, to hire me to be their shamani.
Amazing. I can only imagine how many children you'll end up helping. Like, it'll be just astronomical.
Well, it's I feel like it's going to turn into, like, I want to create an education where people that also either want to become a nanny with these core values can, I can come and teach them these values and these modalities, and yeah, hold more like workshops, group sessions for families. To either, like, the bigger vision is to create a festival, a 3-day festival. Ooh. For families to come together and do healings, where I come in and hire people to do breath work and to do inner child work and to do movement work and vulnerability and relating courses, and all in this like 3-day festival is the big dream of mine. So I can reach more people.
That sounds incredible. I would definitely be interested in that when that eventuates.
Yes. Yeah. Yay.
All right. Thank you so much, Rochelle. This has
been
really
amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And yeah, all the best, podcasters.